Chapter 34, Infiltration. The day of Pentecost is an event remembered by millions of Christians each year. Although Acts 2 is one of the more familiar passages in the New Testament outside the Gospels, what the passage describes as happening that day definitely sounds strange. And when the day of Pentecost had come, they were all together in the same place. And suddenly a sound like a violent rushing wind came from heaven and filled the whole house where they were sitting. And divided tongues like fire appeared to them and rested on each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages, as the Spirit gave them ability to speak out. Now there were Jews residing in Jerusalem, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when this sound occurred, the crowd gathered and was in confusion, because each one was hearing them speak in his own language. And they were astounded and astonished, saying, "Behold, are not all these who are speaking Galileans? And how do we hear each one of us in our own native language? Parthians and Medes and Elamites and those residing in Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya toward Cyrene, and the Romans who were in town, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabs. We hear them speaking in our own languages the great deeds of God." And all were amazed and greatly perplexed, saying one to another, "What can this mean?" But others jeered and said, "They are full of sweet new wine." Acts 2, verses 1 through 13. This description of the events of Pentecost is sprinkled with divine counsel imagery and has secure connections to the supernatural Deuteronomy 32 worldview we've talked about at length. Revealing those features is central to understanding what's happening in Acts 2 and the role it plays in Yahweh's plan to reclaim the nations and restore Eden. Divine commissioning. The first two points of the description that deserve attention are the violent rushing wind and divided tongues like fire. Both are images in the Old Testament associated with God's presence. The disciples are being commissioned by God in His counsel like the prophets of old. The whirlwind is familiar from divine encounters of Elijah in 2 Kings 2:1-11, and Job 38:1 and 40:6. Ezekiel's divine commissioning likewise has the enthroned Yahweh coming with great wind, Ezekiel 1:4. The whirlwind motif is often accompanied by storm imagery, which can also include fire, Isaiah 30:30. Having wind as an element in describing God's presence makes sense given that the Hebrew word translated wind can also be rendered spirit. Ezekiel's commissioning is particularly instructive since not only does Yahweh come to him with a wind, but the wind there is fire flashing, Ezekiel 1:4. Burning fire is a familiar element of divine council throne room scenes. For example, Isaiah 6:4-6, and Daniel 7:9. It is especially prominent in the appearances at Sinai, Exodus 3:2, 19:18, 20:18, and Isaiah 4:5. Fire in the Old Testament was an identifier of the presence of God, a visible manifestation of Yahweh's glory and essence. It was also a way of describing divine beings in God's service, Judges 13:20. In Psalm 104:4. The wind and fire in Acts 2 signify to the readers, informed by divine counsel scenes, that the gathered followers of Jesus were being commissioned by divine encounter. They were being chosen to preach the good news of Jesus' work. The fire connects them to the throne room. The tongues are emblematic of their speaking ministry. Back to Babel. At first glance, there doesn't seem to be much in the Pentecost description that relates to the incident at Babel, which had such cosmic, geographical, and theological importance in the Old Testament. That first glance would be mistaken. There are two key terms in the passage that connect it back to Babel in an unmistakable way. The flaming tongues are described as divided, Greek diamizero, and the crowd, composed of Jews from all the nations, is said to have been confused, the Greek sunchio. The second term, sunchio, in verse 6, is the same word used in the Septuagint version of the Babel story in Genesis 11:7. Come, let us go down and confuse, Septuagint, sunchio, their language there. The multiplicity of nations represented at Pentecost is another link to Babel. Each nation had a national language. More importantly, all those nations referred to in Acts 2, 9 through 11, had been disinherited by Yahweh when they were divided. The other word of importance, demerizo, in verse 3, is also used in the Septuagint, but not in Genesis 11. It's found exactly where one would expect it, if we're thinking in cosmic geographical terms, Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, Septuagint. When the Most High divided, diamerizo, the nations, when he scattered humankind, he fixed the boundaries of the nations. This is a strong indication that Luke is drawing on the Septuagint, and specifically the Tower of Babel story in Genesis 11, and Deuteronomy 32, 8 and 9. To describe the events on Pentecost. What happened there has some relationship to what happened at Babel. But what is it? At Pentecost, the tongues are divided, diamerizo, or perhaps more coherently distributed among the disciples as they are commissioned to preach the good news to the throngs at Pentecost. As Jews gathered in Jerusalem for the celebration, heard and embraced the news of Jesus and his resurrection, Jews who embraced Jesus as Messiah would carry that message back to their home countries and nations. Babel's disinheritance was going to be rectified by the message of Jesus, the second Yahweh incarnate, and his Spirit. The nations would again be his. Go into all the earth. The really amazing thing about Acts 2 is the part people skip, the list of nations. To understand what Luke's list telegraphed, we have to go back to Genesis 11 again. Here's a map of the nations listed in Genesis 10 that were divided in Genesis 11. What are we looking at? The key idea to grasp is that the table of nations in Genesis represents the known world at the time it was written. The Old Testament is a product of the ancient Near Eastern environment in which the biblical writers lived. There are no references in it, or anywhere else in the Bible, to locations like China, South America, North America, or Australia. What this means is that the Old Testament description of the disinheriting of the nations in Genesis 11 and Deuteronomy 32, 8 and 9 is based on the nations known in biblical times. The Table of Nations lists known nations east to west from eastern Mesopotamia to Tarshish, Genesis 10:4, the most remote western point. What lay beyond Tarshish, though what we now call the Straits of Gibraltar, was a complete mystery to the biblical writers. The list of nations in Act 2 is not merely a rehashing of all the names in Genesis 10. Many names are different. A few observations about this list, however, reveal that it nevertheless correlates with the Table of Nations and its significance for cosmic geography. First, the book of Acts is about the spread of the gospel to the known world at the time. The book begins with the statement in Acts 1:8 that the disciples who will encounter the Spirit are to be Jesus' witnesses to the known world. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. The end of the earth in the days of Luke and, of course, the Apostle Paul, was the extent of the Roman Empire. This brings us to a second important observation. In terms of geographical coverage, the reach of the gospel chronicled in the book of Acts constitutes an east-to-west sweep through the known world. Establishing that requires a closer inspection of the nations listed in Acts 2:9-11 at the Pentecost event. Parthians and Medes and Elamites and those residing in Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya toward Cyrene, and the Romans who were in town, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabs, Acts 2:9-11. There are significant patterning to the list of nations in Act 2, connected with the coming of the Spirit and the commissioning of the disciples. The list begins with Parthians and Medes and Elamites and those residing in Mesopotamia, 2:9. Jewish literature from the intertestamental period tells us there was a Jewish population in Parthia, or Persia, at this time. 1 Maccabees 15, verses 15 through 22. These were Jews who had migrated to Persia after choosing not to return to Jerusalem after the end of the exile. The Medes are known from the Old Testament in connection with the 10 northern tribes of Israel had been deported by the Assyrians, 2 Kings 17:6 and 18:11. Persians, Parthians, and Medes are mentioned together in the Old Testament in Esther 1:19 and Daniel 5:28, Daniel 6:8, 12 and 15. And the kings of Media are mentioned with the Elamites as well, Jeremiah 25:25. The list in Acts then begins at the furthest point east where there were Jewish populations, then progressed westward. After moving westward through Mesopotamia, the list naturally splits into southern and northern directions, following the land as it forks at the Mediterranean Sea. The southern fork extends through Judea and Arabia. The island of Crete is also mentioned. Paul took the gospel to both places, Titus 1:5, Galatians 1:15 17. For the most part, Paul's missionary journeys followed the North Fork along Asia Minor and Greece. But there were people at Pentecost from the nations of the South Fork. We know the gospel followed the Nile down to Ethiopia, Acts 8:26 through 40, and bore fruit in Cyrene, Acts 11:20. And 13:1. The list keeps moving westward to Rome. By starting in the east, where there were Jewish populations because of the exile, and moving west, the Pentecost list confirms God's evangelism strategy articulated by Paul, who said that the gospel was for the Jew first, and then the Gentile, Romans 1:16. 3,000 Jews came to believe in Jesus as a result of the events at Pentecost, Acts 2:41, and those 3,000 Jewish converts went back to their homelands after the Pentecost pilgrimage. These new disciples were the seeds of the gospel, Yahweh's plan to reclaim the nations. The book of Acts ends with Rome, the destination of the imprisoned Paul on his way to appeal to Caesar. Luke's account, therefore, has Rome as its westernmost progression. But reversing the disinheritance of the nations required going further than Rome. The most westerly point in the table of nations was Tarshish. Does the pattern of reversal initiated at Pentecost include Tarshish? Amazingly, it does. I must get to Spain. The New Testament and early church tradition suggests that Paul was released from his bondage and went further west before being taken into custody by the Romans for a second and final time. In fact, Paul told the people that he fully expected to go to Spain after the Roman imprisonment mentioned in Acts. In his letters to the Romans, Paul told them twice that he intended to go to Spain, Romans 15:24-28. For this reason, I also was hindered many times from coming to you. And now, no longer having a place in these regions, but having a desire for many years to come to you, whenever I travel to Spain. For I hope, while I am passing through, to see you, and to be sent on my way by you, whenever I have first enjoyed your company for a while. But now I am traveling to Jerusalem, serving the saints. For Macedonia and Achaia were pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem. For they were pleased to do so, and they are obligated to them. For if the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual things, they ought also to serve them in material things. Therefore, after I have accomplished this, and sealed this fruit for delivery to them, I will depart by way of you for Spain. Romans 15:23-28. Why is Spain of any concern to us? And why did Paul want so badly to go there? In Paul's day, Spain was where Tarshish was. Tarshish was a Phoenician colony in what was later Spain. The point is profound. Paul was convinced that his life mission as apostle to the Gentiles, the disinherited nations, would only be finished when he got to Spain. As incredible as it sounds, Paul was conscious that his mission for Jesus actually involved spreading the gospel to the westernmost part of the known world, Tarshish, so that the disinheritance at Babel would be reversed. The fullness of the Gentiles. Paul telegraphed that belief in Romans 11, even before he told his readers he wanted to go to Spain, Romans 15:24-28. Discerning that requires observing how Paul is tracking on certain Old Testament passages about the reclamation of the nations, the Gentiles. For I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, of this mystery, so that you will not be wise in your own sight that a partial hardening is happening to Israel until the full number of the Gentiles has come in, and so all Israel will be saved, just as it is written, the deliverer will come out of Zion. He will turn away ungodliness from Jacob, and this is the covenant from me with them when I take away their sins. Romans 11:25-27. Paul says, I want you to understand this mystery. What mystery? That God's own portion and son Israel hardened their heart? For how long? Until the full number of the Gentiles has come in. Why is it important that this inclusion of the Gentiles happen? And so all Israel will be saved. Paul includes people from the disinherited nations in Israel, Yahweh's family. This family reunion will only happen when the deliverer comes out of Zion. But why would Paul link the full number of the Gentiles with Spain, Tarshish? Why did he believe that his life and ministry would not be over until he got there? Because he knew Isaiah 66:15-23. The passage has a number of correlations with the events of Pentecost, not only with respect to Acts 2, but other passages as well. Recall that in the last chapter we saw how Psalm 68, including the conquest of Bashan, was quoted by Paul in Ephesians 4 about the victory of Jesus and the coming of the Spirit at Pentecost. I've listed those correlations in the table below and inserted footnotes to guide our reading. Table. Heading. Isaiah 66:15-23. Table heading. Other passages and notes. Isaiah 66:15-23. For look, Yahweh will come in fire, and his chariots like the storm wind, to give back his anger and wrath, and his rebuke in flames of fire. For Yahweh enters into judgment on all flesh with fire and his sword, and those slain by Yahweh shall be many. Verses 15 through through 16. Other passages and notes. A violent rushing wind came from heaven and divided tongues like fire appearing to them. Acts 2, verses 2 through 3. A mountain of God is the mountain of Bashan. This mountain God desires for his dwelling. The chariots of God are twice 10,000 with thousands doubled. You have ascended on high. You have led away captives. You have received gifts from among humankind. Psalm 68, 15 through 18. Isaiah 66, 15 through 23. And I am about to come to gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. Verse 18. Other passages and notes. Now there were Jews residing in Jerusalem, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when the sound occurred, the crowd gathered and was in confusion, because each one was hearing them speaking in his own language. Acts 2, 5. Isaiah 66, 15 through 23. I will set a sign among them and will send survivors from them to the nations. Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, who draw the bow, Tubal and Javan, the faraway coastlands that have not heard of my fame and have not seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the nations. Verse 19. Other passages and notes. Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia, and Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya towards Cyrene. Acts 2, 9 and 10. Isaiah 66, 15 through 23. And bring all your countrymen from all the nations as an offering to Yahweh on horses and chariots, and in litters and on mules and camels to my holy mountain Jerusalem, says Yahweh, just as the sons of Israel bring an offering on a clean vessel to the house of Yahweh. And indeed, I will take some of them as priests and for Levites, says Yahweh, verses 20 and 21. For just as the new heavens and the new earth that I'm about to make shall stand before me, declares Yahweh, so shall your descendants and your name stand. And this shall happen from new moon to new moon and from Sabbath to Sabbath. All flesh shall come to bow in worship before me, says Yahweh, verses 22 and 23. Other passages and notes. See Paul's mission as apostle to the Gentiles. End of table. Why did Paul want to get to Spain, Tarshish? Paul saw his ministry as the fulfillment of the prophecy of Isaiah 66, where Yahweh would take people from all nations to be his children. Paul believed he was the instrument to bring in the full number of the Gentiles that would result in all true Israelites, those who believe in Jesus, being saved. Romans 11, 25 through 27. Tarshish is listed in Isaiah 66, but was not represented in the names at Pentecost. The furthest point west in the Pentecost list is Rome. Paul knew that Spain, Tarshish, was part of the mission of Isaiah 66. He needed Spain so that his offering to the Gentiles may become acceptable, sanctified by the Holy Spirit. Romans 15, 16. And so it was that a room full of Jews, commissioned directly by the Spirit, went out and began the process by which the disinherited nations would be brought back to Yahweh's family. Pentecost marked the beginning of an unstoppable march across the known world. In our world, a world they didn't know, that would culminate in a global Eden.